Genesis chapter 2 is where we're going to be today, and I want to talk to you. We've been talking about some key issues in our spiritual and emotional health. And early on, we talked about this, in case you've joined us in the middle of this series, we just talked about the fact that you really can't be emotionally healthy and spiritually unhealthy for any extended period of time. That if you are spiritually unhealthy and you don't address that, if you're emotionally unhealthy and you don't address that, that's going to damage you spiritually. And likewise, if you feel like I'm emotionally healthy, but you're out of touch with God, that's going to damage you emotionally. But these are two character traits that we have, our spirituality, our emotional character. These are two things that we have that kind of walk hand in hand together. And so we want to look inside ourselves and see, are we emotionally healthy? Are we spiritually healthy? And what can we do to make ourselves more healthy? You remember last week we talked about just four basic pillars or legs of a table that we needed to keep in balance and have all going in order to be healthy. And we've talked in weeks before about a number of other things. Today, I want to speak to you about the concept of the Sabbath. And I'm using a lot of this material. It's kind of like, this isn't Pete Scazzaro's book, so don't think, I don't need the small group. I had the sermons because I've really radically changed it and made it my own. But I'm indebted to Mr. Scazzaro for just the ideas that got me thinking about this sort of thing. Something I've noticed through the years is how as our society changes and as time moves on, there seems to be a great rift between our society at large and Christians. And as it seems, the sociologists would say we're entering a post-Christian era. That is an era of time where Christianity is not as influential and has not infiltrated society as deeply as it did in my parents' generation, for example. There's a chasm between Christians and non-Christians. And part of that has to do with the words we use, just the nomenclature. And so when I talk to you this morning about the word that's on the screen, about the Sabbath, that means different things to different people. For example, if you go to church, it probably means Sunday. And when Pastor Steve says Sabbath, I know he's talking about Sunday. Or if you eat at Chick-fil-A, you know what the Sabbath means. Closed. Because they're closed on Sunday. They don't have, if you work there, that's a great thing. My wife and I, when we first learned about Chick-fil-A, heard that it was closed on Sunday, we're like, that is such a good idea. And then on our most recent vacation to Florida back in March or April of this past year, we were coming up and, oh, there's a Chick-fil-A. We're driving on Sunday. We pulled in, it was closed, and we said, how dare they, you know? Right? Yeah. Yeah. The Sabbath means closed if you work at Chick-fil-A. If you're a classic rock fan, you know that it means Ozzy, and you're thinking, oh, okay. If you're a Doctor Who fan, Sabbath is a bad guy. He's one of the villains in Doctor Who, if you're nerdy enough to watch that or read that kind of stuff, like my wife and I are. Different words mean different things to different people, even within the church. For example, when I say the word Sabbath, it means different things to different people. From the guy who wanted me to write a letter to his employer insisting that it was against the laws of our church for him to go to work on Sunday. Can you imagine that? He's very distressed when I wouldn't write that letter. To the pastor who, this is my wife's pastor when she was a little girl, when you were pulling into Sunday school, the parsonage was right next to the church and you could see the pastor outside finishing up washing his car on the Sabbath. And he would do that because he wanted to emphasize, I am free from the law, and I am in grace. And so there's a wide spectrum of understanding about the Sabbath. Today, I really want to give you what I believe is a portion of balanced biblical teaching about the Sabbath. And we're going to take it from two places. Primarily, I'm going to talk to you about a little bit that Jesus and Paul said, but I want you to see the origin of the idea of the Sabbath, and that's why I have you in Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 1 are the 6 days of creation, and God has made it all. And in chapter 2, verse 1, it says this, thus the heavens and the earth were completed in their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing, so on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day. Now I want you to pause. Now I want to explain to you what that word blessed means. I just heard it this past week in a message I was listening to. The most basic understanding of the word bless means bowed to. And so when we say, my soul blesses the Lord, we're saying, my soul reveres the Lord, my soul admires him, my soul bows to the Lord and acknowledges his greatness. On the other hand, sometimes we say, God bless me, and the scripture says that God blesses us. And he's not bowing to us, but he is yielding to that which is good for us by providing what's good for us. And so when it says here that God blesses the Sabbath, what God is saying is that he is acknowledging, even forming for all time, that this day will be distinct from others, that it will stand out from all other days, from the other six. This is the important day in God's mind. God blessed it, the seventh day, and made it holy because he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. Now, I'd like you to turn, if you would, to the second book of the Bible, Exodus, and I want you to read verse 20 there. And if you didn't think to bring a Bible, or not verse 20, chapter 20, if you didn't think to bring a Bible, there are Bibles in the pews. So we're in Exodus chapter 20, and I'd like you to look at verse 8. What we're in here is the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments were given to Moses. They were written by the hand of God. And here they are. Verse 8 is the third or fourth commandment, depending how you count them. And it's interesting to me, before I read this commandment, I want you to notice in verse 13 that the commandment about murder is only four words long. Thou shalt not murder, right? But the commandment about the Sabbath is four verses long. Doesn't mean it's more important. It means God wants us to understand the why of this. Because the why of why you don't murder, that's pretty obvious. But why do I have to keep the Sabbath? Listen to these four verses as we begin at verse 8. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your manservant or maidservant, nor your animals, nor the alien within your gates. For in 6 days, okay, wait. Look at the first word in verse 11, for. So he's going to explain to you why this is important. Why do I want you to observe the Sabbath? And in verse 11 he says, because in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day, and therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath and made it holy. Do you see that God has good reason for us wanting to do this? We are to observe the Sabbath because he observed the Sabbath. And I want to posit to you, I want to suggest to you that you really can't be healthy unless you're giving consideration to the Sabbath in your life. I want to offer you a biblical view of the Sabbath. And I want to begin by saying to you, this is not some arbitrary law that God has established. It wasn't like God said, you know what, I think I want these guys to go to church. Yeah, that'll be good. And so they're not allowed to do anything else because I really want to make sure they're in church. And they need to do that. I don't want them to have fun on the Sabbath. I want them to be miserable on the Sabbath. Now, that is not accurate at all. That is not the way God had planned the Sabbath. And yet, just a generation ago, that was a lot of the thinking. I can remember in my first church, when I got there, I noticed that in this congregation of about 35 people, there were about 15 motorcycles. And they were all dirt bikes. And so I said to my wife, I think God wants me to buy a dirt bike, honey. I've got to reach these people. And she said, go for it, because I have a cool wife. So I did. I bought a Honda XL500. Great bike. Great bike. And we used to go on Sunday afternoons on all-church dirt bike rides. How cool would that be? Just a bunch of young adults and teenagers out in the woods. And in McKean County, those hillsides are covered with what they called lease roads. They were roads that took you back to oil wells and the Bradford oil filters, and the oil fields, rather, and the Bradford sand. And man, we had great times doing that. I was announcing that one Sunday morning, and one of my shut-ins was in church with her son. And afterward, that week, I went to visit her, and I said, how are you doing, Ella? She said, I'm doing well. I have to tell you that my son elbowed me while you were making the announcements Sunday morning. And I said, why was that, Ella? Because you talked about having a church dirt bike ride on Sunday. And he said to me, Mom, you didn't even allow me to ride my bicycle on Sunday. Now the church is having dirt bike rides. And then she said this, we were so wrong because we made the Lord's Day miserable for our children. made them wear their white shirt and black pants all day long, along with the tie. And Ella had the insight to say, that was just wrong to see that commandment as a ball and chain that way. I want you to think deeply enough to see that the Sabbath is actually a gift that God has given to man, not a ball and chain to hang around man's neck. That's why in places like Mark chapter 2, when Jesus is kind of in trouble with the Pharisees, and he was often in trouble with the Pharisees, but it's dealing with the Sabbath at this time, Jesus makes this statement, and I love the statement he makes. He says, the Sabbath was made for man. Man was not made to serve the Sabbath. And so the Sabbath is a gift for you. But I want to say this. Unless you will use it, unless you will appropriate it, unless you will observe the Sabbath, it will not be of any value to you. And it will be just like any other day. Now, when you study the Sabbath, you begin to understand that the Sabbath is a day for you to take pleasure in good things. And so going on an all-church dirt bike ride, that would be a good thing to do on the Sabbath. That's a pleasurable thing to do. God was actually taking pleasure in the day on the Sabbath when he rested. I mean, you don't have to be a rocket science to know that God never needs to rest. He doesn't slumber. He doesn't sleep. He doesn't get tired. He doesn't have to get a breather somewhere along the way. So when it says that God rested on the Sabbath, I believe what it's saying is, he said, I'm done. I don't need to do this anymore. And now I can simply enjoy that which I have made. Now, people who are artists, people who create, they understand this kind of thing. If you're a quilter and you make quilts, I can guarantee you when you finish the quilt for your grandson or your granddaughter and you have it all done and you put that last stitch in it, you don't just quickly fold it up and put it in a box and say, I can't wait for Christmas to see how he'll enjoy that. You probably take that quilt and you lay it out in the spare room on the bed there, and you probably make it a point to walk in there every few days and say, wow, that is a nice looking quilt that I made. I did a good job on that. I say that because I am married to a quilter, and I have watched her walk down the hallway in the parsonage where she has a quilt hung, a small quilt, wall hanging kind of thing, and I have heard her say these words, I love that quilt, and she made it. You understand? But what she is doing is she is taking pleasure in that which she has created. And that's what God is doing as well. Eric and Kay Rolls, they are a sermon illustration today, and I didn't even ask permission. Eric and Kay Rolls are building a home. Kay is my friend on Facebook. I try not to look at Facebook too often, but when I do, I'm always glad to see pictures of the house and how it's coming along. And was it yesterday or day before, I saw a picture of the house and it said, the siding is going on. And I thought, how great is that? The siding's going on. I'm so glad for the Rolls. And I think to myself, Kay doesn't put that on there to do this, because I know Kay. I've known Kay longer than I've known any of you. Kay does not put that on there to go, we're getting siding, nanny, nanny, poo, poo. We would unfriend her if she did that, right? Yeah, yeah. Here's what she's doing. We have accomplished something wonderful, and we are celebrating it. Thank you, thank you, thank you that the siding's going on. She's Sabbathing with that picture. Do you understand? Because the Sabbath is a time to take pleasure in the good things that have been done. And you do the very same thing. When you take pleasure in good things on the Sabbath, you're acknowledging those good things come from God. You know, years ago, even our church was kind of legalistic about the Sabbath. I did get permission to share this sermon illustration from Jim Bell. I shared it in the first service without permission, but I asked for permission because he's going to be here this time. Years ago, churches didn't lift the service for anything. You know, it didn't matter what was going on. Super Bowl? No, we are not lifting the evening service. Christmas Eve? No, we are not lifting. Christmas Day? No, we are not lifting the evening service. 4th of July? I don't care if there's going to be fireworks. I'm going to be at the church at 7 o'clock for the evening service. Memorial Day weekend, Labor Day weekend, we're going to be there. And it was Jim Bell who pointed out one time in a leadership meeting that it was kind of awkward to be at a family picnic, taking pleasure in your family who is there, and then all of a sudden having to take off. I got to go to the evening service. I'll see you guys. It kind of interrupts the pleasure of the good thing that is a holiday. Do you understand that? And so in recent years, we've adopted a practice of lifting evening service on Memorial Day, on Labor Day. I love it. I love it. Because a Sabbath is a day to enjoy good things. You might spend part of the Sabbath visiting with a friend, reading a good book. My wife curls up in a chair and reads a book on a Sabbath sometimes. Taking a Sunday drive. Doing something incredibly holy, like watching the Steelers. Baking something for someone you love, like your husband. See, the idea is that you try to spend the Sabbath in such a way that when it is concluded, you feel like you've experienced the presence of God. Did you hear that sentence? The idea is that you try to spend the Sabbath in such a way that when it is concluded, you feel that you have taken pleasures in good things and experienced the presence of God. That's one of the purposes for the Sabbath. By the way, another purpose for the Sabbath is it gives you a chance to show what God looks like. We're made in God's image. We reflect His likeness, you and I, made in the image of God. But there are things we can do that cause us to reflect His likeness even more vividly. For example, when you give, you're being like God and you're giving. When you love, you're being like God and you're giving. When you sacrifice, you're being like God and sacrificing. When you create, you're being like God and you're creating. And when you rest on the Sabbath, you're being like God. You're showing people what God looks like. And you remind those who are watching you that we are created in the image of God and that He took pleasure in that which He had created. And you're reminding us when you Sabbath that God cherishes us. You know, more people than I can remember in our society just kind of ignore the Sabbath, it seems, as time goes by. I don't remember seeing people working on the Sabbath as frequently as you see them work on the Sabbath today. I'm talking about working around the house. And I'm not trying to judge them or anything, you know. I've been there, done that. I'm not doing that. I just kind of feel bad for them. Because there they are. They're painting, they're cleaning, they're remodeling, they're doing yard work. And you know, and sometimes you'll talk to somebody, you'll say, yeah, but I really love that. I love cutting the grass. And that's why I do it on the Lord's Day. Great. I got about an acre and a half you can cut every week as well. If you love cutting the grass that much, come over to my house and do it. No, you don't love cutting the grass. You just like getting it done. And it's convenient to get it done then. Now look, I don't care if you cut your grass on Sunday, and I think you can do that and still be right in tune with God because maybe you do love it. Okay? I don't really care about that. But here's what I don't want you to do. I don't want you to lie to yourself and say that you're really celebrating the Sabbath and you're really resting when you're really not. That's all I care about. I just don't want you to lie to yourself and to God. When you and your family have a rule that says, you know, on the Lord's Day, we take it easy and we rest. You're reflecting God, and other people who see that, well, they're really kind of jealous, you know. I read a book when I was a little boy, I can't remember what it was, about two families, a family who was Christian, a family who wasn't. And the little children in the family that wasn't Christian, they hated the Christians because the Christians got to rest on Sunday and they never got to. You know? And you're reflecting what it means to know God when you take that rest. There's a third thing the Sabbath is, and that is that it is a day that is actually set aside for worship. It is a day set aside for you to worship God. And as a pastor, I run into people who love to tell me this all the time. I really don't go to church on Sundays. I worship the God, you know, I worship God outside when I'm water skiing. I worship God when I'm fishing. I worship God when I'm shopping. I worship God when I'm laying out. And those are all good things. You can do all those on Sunday, as far as I'm concerned, except the laying out part. My dermatologist doesn't want you to do that, okay? But the rest of it, yeah, go ahead and do that. Those are good things. But don't confuse those things with biblical worship. Don't confuse that with biblical worship, because in the Bible, they met together with one another like we're doing here for the express purpose of spending time worshiping God. You see it in places like Acts 20:17, where it says, on the first day of the week, we came together. And that's when Paul spoke to them and he preached. He preached so long, a little boy fell asleep, fell out the window and died. That's a long sermon, buddy, you know? And Paul raised him from the dead. I would preach that long, but I can't raise people from the dead like Paul can, so I'll give you a break. But he's doing it on the Lord's Day. He's doing it on the first day of the week. And it's generally understood that the reason Christians do that on the first day of the week, the reason we worship on Sunday, did you ever wonder about that? Sunday's the first day of the week. Why aren't we worshiping on the seventh day of the week? That's what God says to do. The seventh day of the week's the Holy One. What are we doing on the first? From the very beginning, from Acts chapter 20 is where you see it. You can see that the New Testament believers met together on the first day of the week. And probably the reason for that was that they were celebrating the resurrection of Christ, which occurred on the first day of the week. And second, they probably had a little collision doing it on Saturday because that was the Jewish day to worship. And they probably just needed, desired a distinct day and took the first day of the week. And the Apostle Paul addresses this. He addresses it in Romans. He's talking in chapter 14, and he says words like this. One man considers one day more holy than the other. Another man considers every day alike. Each one should do what he's fully convinced of in his own mind, for he who regards one day as special does so to the Lord. So Paul's saying, I don't care which day you do. It doesn't matter. But you want to have a Lord's Day. You want to have a Sabbath. And don't let anyone confuse you that your worship is wrong because it's not on Saturday. And the reason I have to say that is because in my first church, I lost a woman who had been going there since childhood. She was probably about 60 years old, and another church group came in and confused her, saying, you are worshiping on the wrong day of the week. You need to come and worship with us because we're the only church that worships on Saturday. And so you need to be in my church on Saturday. No. Did you hear what Paul just said? Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. He who regards one day as special does so to the Lord. If you want to worship Saturday, more power to you. But there's nothing wrong with Sunday. In fact, that is the established tradition. And beyond that, don't let anyone convince you that no day is sacred. Don't, if you don't take a day to specifically worship God, then you're robbing yourself of the blessing that comes with this commandment of God. And you're really cheating yourself if you're not following this biblical pattern of worship. A fourth thing that the Sabbath is, it's a day to reflect. This is my favorite part of this sermon. I knew it would be when I wrote it. You know how when you're writing a sermon, yeah, you know what I'm talking about. When you're writing a sermon and all of a sudden you're like, hey, this is a good part. Okay, that's what was happening to me when I was sitting on the back porch writing this part of the sermon this past week. On the seventh day of creation, God is reflecting on what he did. And I'm going to take just a little bit of poetic liberty as I talk about God. And you who know me know I don't mean this disrespectfully. I just want to make the point. I'm imagining God on a seventh day. And he's been working for 6 days? No, he's just going to sit back and put his feet up and take a look at what he made. Pour me an iced tea, Michael. And bring that and put it right here. Thanks. I appreciate that. Look at them fishes. I made some fishes that are so colorful. You know what I'll bet? I'll bet someday they'll put those in aquariums and restaurants and stuff. Those are great. I love that. Look, do you see that duck-billed platypus? You know why I made it? For seventh grade science classes? It's so funny. I know you don't know what seventh grade is, but it's coming. Yeah. That's great. Oh, I love the horses. Didn't I do a good job with that Arabian stallion? Watch him run. Boo! Yeah, look at that. Wow, he's going. Oh, I did a great job with him. There's Adam. That's the best work I've ever done. All that other stuff, I looked and saw it every day and said it was good. But Adam, that's very good. That's the best thing. And so he's taking that seventh day and he's reflecting on the last 6 days. And he's enjoying it, and he's finding satisfaction. He's deriving satisfaction from what he has done in the past 6 days. The Sabbath is a day to reflect. And it's healthy, emotionally and spiritually, to reflect on the good things of the past week. I don't know why, but I am genetically wired to think about the bad things of the past week. And my wife is constantly reminding me that the glass is half full. And the Sabbath is a day to notice the good things of the past week. For example, on Monday, I got a phone call. Pastor Steve, we're having some struggles in our marriage. We just wondered if you could help us out. Yeah, I'll be over. Hopped on my motorcycle, drove to their house, sat on their back porch, listened. Tried to give them a little bit of counsel. Helped them kind of resolve a couple very basic issues, helped them along. And it was a good experience. About an hour and a half later, I prayed with them. There was just a sense of peace that was there. And I worship God on Sunday because of what happened on Monday. And then Tuesday, I went with Chuck Kim and Frank Hutton to see Jim Mitchell in a nursing home in State College. I got to tell you what that was like. I went in there, and I'm kind of leading the way, and Frank is behind me. And I don't know if you know Frank, most of you do. His nickname is Jeep, and Jim has known Jeep since they were little. And so I'm walking in there, and Jim Mitchell's laying in that bed, and he looks, he says, "Is that Jeep behind you?" And I said, "Yeah, that's Frank." And then he looked, and Frank came in, and then Chuck came in. And Mr. Mitchell has this thing about his speech that he can begin a sentence well, but it kind of gets kind of mixed up at the end. His speech, something happened with a stroke that does that. And he looked at Chuck Kim, and he said to Chuck, "Chuck, I remember you singing, 'His eye is on the shallow.'" And Chuck said, "What?" "His eye is on the shallow and shasimera." And I knew, because I'd been listening to Mr. Mitchell previously. I've spoken to him before. I knew what he was saying. Listen to the first part of the sentence, guess the last part. He was saying, "Chuck, I can remember you singing in church, 'His eye is on the sparrow.'" And so I just looked at Chuck and I said, "Chuck, his eye is on the sparrow. You remember that? 'I sing because I'm happy.'" And the four of us sang that song together in the nursing home. And I worship God on Sunday because of that event on Tuesday. Do you understand? Do you understand? Sabbath is to reflect on that. Then on Wednesday, Laurel and I took a day off and went to a funeral. Two or three counties away. Morris Friedland, a pastor who'd been in a nursing home for the past several years. I only know him, I'd met him once. And I only know him because Laurel's sister is married to his son. And so we're there kind of to support the family. And the funeral began at 1 o'clock, and we left at 4, and it was still going. That's a long funeral service. I'm sitting there listening to that, and I fidget real bad, you know? And I'm sitting there listening to that, and I'm just struck with this amazing thing, and Laurel and I talked about it afterward, how they passed around a microphone, and one man and one woman after another stood up and said, "God changed my life through the ministry of this pastor. I would be in hell today if he had not pointed me to Jesus for my salvation." One after another, after another, after another. And 3 hours later, we were sorry we had to leave because we had an appointment, but we were sorry we had to leave because it was a holy thing. It was amazing. And I worship God on Sunday because of what happened on Wednesday. And Thursday, I'm sitting in McDonald. People say, where's your study, Pastor Steve? It's wherever I am. I'm sitting in McDonald. I have my laptop open and I'm working on this sermon. And I get a call from one of the best friends I've ever had. He lives right here in Kerwinsville. He calls me and he says, "Hey, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm at McDonald's." He said, "I'll come and have lunch with you." He came. We had lunch together for about an hour. And I thought to myself, how blessed am I that one of the best friends I've ever had, I have right now. Because how many 52-year-old pastors would say that? I always told our kids, the best friends you'll ever have are probably the ones you have in college. And that can maybe is, maybe isn't true. But I thought on that Thursday, I have great friends right now. So I worship God on Sunday because of what happened on Thursday. Friday night, I'm sitting out on my back porch, because that's my office too. Laurel has a bunch of people in there doing some scrapbooking thing, and I'm sitting out there on the back porch, and I get to the end. There it is. The sermon is over. And you think you're glad when the sermon's over? Nobody's gladder than I am when I hit that print button, you know? There it went. It printed right to the printer. And I thought, it is so good to have your sermon done Friday night at 8 o'clock. That feels so good to be done with your sermon a day early, you know? And I worship God on Sunday because of what happened on Friday. And then yesterday morning, I'm sitting with a bunch of guys. And we pretty much have the place full. There's maybe 3 or 4 chairs left. And we're missing guys because Matt McCracken, who's got the reverse mohawk thing going in the nursery, And Bob wasn't there, and a couple guys were doing other things. We had all those guys there. And we talked about who we are in Christ. A bunch of men in a restaurant in front of waitresses who wait till we're done with our sentence before they take our order because they respect what we're doing. You understand? In front of other patrons in the restaurant, in front of God and everybody, talking out loud about God. And I thought, what an awesome thing this is. And I worship God on Sunday because of the good thing that happened on Saturday. Are you getting the point? That the Sabbath is a time for you to reflect on the good things that have happened in your week. To remember them. Because that is what God was doing when He was sitting there with His iced tea. He didn't need a breather. He was stopping His work to reflect on the goodness that He had created. Let me ask you, how faithfully or how well are you observing the Sabbath? And I just really have three things to suggest. And the first one is this. Let me suggest that you actually evaluate how different, apart from attending church, your Sabbath really is. I mean, apart from the couple, 3 hours you might be here on Sunday morning, how different is today from yesterday? Are you Sabbathing? Are you observing the Sabbath? What do you do on Sundays, apart from going to church, that you don't do every other day of the week? And what do you avoid on Sundays to make it a special day? I just want you to think about that and evaluate your own Sabbath rituals. And then second, I would like you to actually consider what needs to change. Don't just evaluate it and say, oh, you know what? This isn't a lot different than any other day of the week. Maybe I need to change something. And consider, what do I need to put into it to gain more from this gift that God has given me? Or what should I get rid of so that I can observe and enjoy the Sabbath more? And then here's your homework. This is for tonight. What time do you go to bed? 6:30? 7? We go to bed at about 11 or 11:30. So tonight, when you go to bed, if it's 11 or 11:30, I want you to reflect on the Sabbath. I want you to think about this very day, August 25th. And I want you to think about, let's see, I got up at this time. Man, alarm clock scared me to death when it woke me up. And then took my shower, I went downstairs, got ready for church. My wife came down, had coffee, headed out the door, got to see a bunch of people at church, did my pod, did all the stuff that I needed to do at church, enjoyed the music, enjoyed the sermon, went home. Just truck through your day, step by step. And doing that, I want you to ask yourself this question. Was this a holy day? Because He blessed the Sabbath and made it holy. I cannot say to you loudly enough that the Sabbath is actually a gift to you from God. I can't explain that clearly enough. I'm old enough to remember when Pennsylvania was getting rid of their blue laws. I was just a child at the time. Some people are like, I don't even know what blue laws are. These are these kind of laws that said certain businesses couldn't be open on Sunday, that you couldn't work and do these specific jobs on Sunday. And they were codified. They were real laws that were in place. And I can remember it was a big issue of debate, like Fox News and CNN would have had it out if they had existed then, you know, arguing about this. And my dad loved talk radio at the time. So everywhere we went, Mike Levine from KDKA was on in the evening from 6 to 9. And you'd hear them debating this over and over and over again. And I can remember the people who wanted to be able to work on Sundays, they won. And the blue laws were eliminated. I often wonder afterward, do they ever regret it? I'm just imagining them trucking into work Sunday morning at 8 o'clock thinking, you know, maybe this wasn't such a good idea. In Christ, you're free to do what you would like on the Sabbath. Is what you're doing such a good idea? Is it blessing you and others? Is it a holy day?